Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I said in September that I cannot guarantee success in Iraq. That is still the case, although I think we are closer.
That's U.S. Ambassador to Iraq, Ryan Crocker. He is testifying before the Senate Armed Services Committee right now, along with General David Petraeus, in this long-scheduled update on the war in general and the troop surge in particular. This is coming just as things are starting to go worse again in Iraq. Insurgent bombings are up. The Iraqi army recently failed that big test against the Mehdi army in Basra. President Bush has canceled the scheduled return of some American troops that was supposed to take place this summer. Obviously, there's a political overlay here. All three presidential candidates are members of this committee and will be doing questioning today and or tomorrow. Clinton, Obama, and McCain. There have already been a couple of outbursts of protest against John McCain when he made a statement earlier. We'll hear one of those coming up in just a minute. And I want to welcome Michael Duffy from Time Magazine, who's been watching the hearing while we've been talking about college seniors looking for work. Hi, Michael. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Brian.
You want to give us a headline and a quick review of what's been taking place?
I think if you had to boil it down to two things, Petraeus began essentially by saying things are better than they were when the surge hit full strength in September, but they're even better than they were when the surge began 15 months before. But he admitted, as is plain to everyone, that they are not as good as they were a month or so ago. He reiterated that the gains that he claims to have made are fragile and reversible. That's language that's virtually identical to what he said the last time he testified. I think there is also a hint in Ambassador Crocker's testimony of a longer-term economic, diplomatic, and military relationship between the U.S. and Iraq that clearly both sides are now talking about. He undressed it a little bit. They're in talks to have essentially a bilateral. They're saying it's not a treaty, but it sure sounds like it's treaty-esque, perhaps for long-term presence of troops.
Well, and we've heard about documents that some people have seen in Iraq. I think Anthony Cordesman was on talking about this recently. When you hear the politics in Washington, it's one thing. When you look at the actual military documents that they're working from in Iraq, they have plans going out to 2012, 2014, and there's this agreement that they're working on toward the end of the year when the current U.S. authority there expires. I asked Undersecretary of State John Negroponte about this recently and said, well, how can you do this when, you know, there's a new administration coming in? And he said the next president of the United States can do whatever he or she wants. They can always change the policy. How much do you know that to be true?
Well, there was some back and forth today that about that very question in the hearing about whether the administration was going to, once it got this deal with Baghdad, going to propose it as a treaty, which would, of course, require Senate approval and be binding, or not. And it appears that they are not. And I think it was Ted Kennedy who managed to get out of Petraeus, or perhaps it was Crocker, I don't recall, an agreement that the next administration could change it, though all these things are difficult to change once they're done, no matter what you call them.
Let's play a clip of Senator McCain. Now, this, you'll have to tell me, is this from his opening statement, or is he questioning somebody?
I don't know what clip you're going to play, Brian.
Okay. Has he done any questioning yet?
He has done some questioning. He's had one round.
Okay. So this, now it's clarified to me that this is from his opening statement. This is McCain's opening statement as a member of the committee.
Uh-huh.
And he argues here that withdrawal from Iraq will end up in further violence and chaos, something we've obviously heard from him before. Uh-huh. Midway through his argument, you'll hear him interrupted by protesters.
Yet should the United States instead choose to withdraw from Iraq before adequate security is established, we will exchange for this victory a defeat that is terrible and long-lasting. Al-Qaeda in Iraq would proclaim victory and increase its efforts to provoke sectarian tensions, pushing for a full-scale civil war that could descend into genocide and destabilize the Middle East. Iraq would become a failed state. It could become a haven for terrorists to train and plan their operations. Iranian influence would increase substantially in Iraq and encourage other countries to seek accommodation with Tehran at the expense of our interests. An American failure would almost certainly require us to return to Iraq or draw us into a wider and far, far costlier war. If, on the other hand, we and the Iraqis are able to build on the opportunity provided by recent successes, we have the chance to leave in Iraq a force for stability and freedom, not conflict and chaos. In doing so, we will ensure...
We're going to ask you, please, to sit down. No more demonstrations, or if there is another one, we're going to have to ask our Capitol Police to remove any demonstrations.
I have had this experience previously, Mr. Chairman. If, on the other hand, we and the Iraqis are able to build on the opportunity provided by recent successes, we have the chance to leave in Iraq a force for stability and freedom, not conflict and chaos.
So, Senator McCain from a little earlier at the Petraeus-Crocker hearings, Michael Duffy from Time Magazine is with us. And, Michael, was that the only moment of protest?
No, there was a later one in which actually I saw one protester who began to shout, "Bring them home." My notes reflect that it was actually during Senator Levin's testimony that someone was tossed from the back row. The most interesting thing that's happened so far actually was a back and forth between Levin and Petraeus when Petraeus came out and said, you know, he's gone to this 45-day halt and the withdrawal of surge forces. And then he went on to explain that after that 45-day period, there would be a unnumbered day-long assessment. Levin kind of drilled down and said, "No, wait a minute, let me get this right. So it's 45 days to consult and evaluate." And Petraeus said yes. And then he goes, and Levin said, "And then there's going to be this period."
You know what? Let me jump in on this because I see now that we have that exact clip
Well, that is the
available.
Most interesting part. Yeah, you should.
That's the most. Okay, so we're going to play this. This is about a minute and a half, an exchange between the chairman of the Armed Services Committee, Carl Levin, and General Petraeus. And I gather a protester pops up in the background in this one as well.
That's right.
When the assessment is at a point that the conditions are met to recommend reduction of forces, then that's what we would do. So the bottom line, sir, is that it's this period after which we do the assessments, and as the conditions are met for further reductions, then we make those recommendations.
Now, if you have any estimate at all as to how long that second period is going to take, are you giving us any ideas to how long that will take? You say over time.
Sir,
Could that be a month? Could that be 2 months?
Sir, it could be less than that.
Could it be more than that?
It could be more than that. Again, right. It's when the conditions are met that we can make a recommendation for further reductions.
Could it be 3 months?
Sir, again, at the end of the period of consolidation and evaluation, it could be right then, or it could be longer. Again, it is when...
If you could please, we're asking the audience, if you could bring the gentleman out, I'm afraid we're going to have to ask him to leave. General. General, we're going to ask you this question again. Could it be as long as 3 months?
Sir, it could be.
That's all I'm asking.
And that's all he's answering.
And then he said, could it be 4 months? And he said, yeah, it could be 4 months. Levin was trying to get a piece of what you'd asked about before, Brian, which is that, you know, the phased halt here, which has different names and different durations, is designed to basically leave the number of troops that we have on the ground there through the election. And Levin is trying to say, you're basically going to hand this off if you had, you know, 45 days to... You know, an undetermined period after that. And it's interesting, one thing Levin didn't kind of drill down on is that what Petraeus said about the undetermined period, assessment period afterwards, is he and you have to listen to the language, I wrote it down twice, we'll wait until the assessment is at a point where the conditions are met for further reductions. So that sentence is complicated because they're doing an assessment, but by the end of the sentence, they're not reductions until after the assessment, until the conditions are met for further reductions. So that's quite open-ended. It's not surprising, given what we know and what we know about the situation on the ground. But it does take an almost a linguist's toothpick to get to the heart of it.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I love that term that you used, phased halt, right? Because it was a phased drawdown in U.S. troops, but they have stopped that now. So it's, I guess, that must be your term or a media term, a phased halt.
Well, they always telegraphed this in January, that they were not going to do it all at once, and that they warned us. We knew that. We knew they would probably take a break in the withdrawal. They did not try, spring that on the public in March. That was always what they were saying would happen. Now it's happening, and as the Congress and the Senate, in this case, tries to determine how long it's going to go on, you can see that the Army doesn't want to say.
Of course, that assessment question can cut both ways. I realize Clinton and Obama are not testifying here. They're on the committee. But has anyone asked them at some other time whether there are certain conditions on the ground that would lead them not to withdraw U.S. troops or to withdraw U.S. troops? And can they get specific about that? Because they both say, well, obviously, if, we'll go back in or slow down a withdrawal if really necessary.
Well, they talk about the beginning of withdrawal. They don't really talk about the end. They both leave room for leaving troops in the country. Obama's talks about taking combat troops out and putting them in Kuwait nearby, but he doesn't talk about taking out support troops. That's the toothpick, the linguistic toothpick you have to use there, what kind of troops he would leave and what kinds of troops he would withdraw. So you have to watch their verbs and their subjects closely.
Here's another clip. This is Senator Warner asking General Petraeus, are the American people safer today because of this effort? And the general gave a very long answer. We're going to play the end of the answer and Senator Warner's follow-up question here.
I do believe we have made progress in important areas in Iraq over the past year, and I believe the recommendations Ambassador Crocker and I have provided are the best course to achieve our important objectives in Iraq.
My clock is moving pretty quickly. It was a fairly simple question. Does that translate into a greater security for those of us at home? I point out this morning indications that up to 80% of the Americans just don't accept the premise at this point in time that it's worth it. Can you now just in simple language tell us, yes, it is worth it, and it is making us safer here at home?
Senator, I do believe it is worth it, or I would not have, I guess, accepted. You do what you're ordered to do, but you sometimes are asked whether you would like to or are willing to take on a task. And I took on the task of the privilege of command of Multinational Force Iraq because I do believe that it is worth it, and I do believe the interests there are of enormous importance, again, to our country, not just to the people of Iraq and the people of that region and the world.
Any comment on that, Michael Duffy from Time Magazine?
I guess he should have left it with the point of his question for someone else to decide. Generals tend to take orders and salute. He's right, although it has been interesting to watch Warner, who's retiring from the Senate after this term, take a more pointed approach to the Armed Services Committee role here.
And, of course, he was the longtime chairman when the Republicans had control.
Yeah, the interesting, sort of descant, the other descant of the hearing so far has been the underperforming nature of the Iraqi forces, 1,000 of whom walked away from the
Basra fight
in Basra last week. That has got the committee quite upset because they've been told, for years now that how much better the Iraqi forces are doing. And so that's been difficult. The other thing here that they were really interested in finding out is when Prime Minister Maliki of Iraq told Petraeus and his team that he was going into Basra with Iraqi forces. And Petraeus admitted that he basically found out about it the day it started.
It's funny about Petraeus saying he's a general who takes orders from the commander-in-chief, and we keep hearing Bush say he's going to let Petraeus, who's on the ground and really knows what's going on, call the shots. Well, I thought we had a civilian control of the military in this country as a central part of our Constitution.
I didn't hear Petraeus say that particular line this morning. Bush has, after years under Don Rumsfeld of basically telling the generals what to do, given at least as far as we can tell, the military the deciding hand on what goes next. It's difficult to know what hand the White House had in his testimony in helping prepare it and tweaking it. There's a fair amount of Iran in this testimony compared to the last time Petraeus appeared,
mm-hmm.
when they seemed to downplay the Iranian threat and role in the insurgency. Now it's dialed up a notch, at least so far today, from as I hear it.
A possible political point, you're saying.
Just a factor to just listen for.
So in our last 45 seconds here, is Petraeus asking for anything? Last time, back in September, was it? He was basically asking for Congress to allow the troop surge to continue, to give it time to work. Is he asking for anything today?
Now, this is a required testimony under the previous deal. But this is the same month that the Pentagon is supposed to ask for another $50 billion in emergency funds to pay for ongoing operations in Iraq and Afghanistan. That's not coincidental.
That's something.
And he did have a number of other minor requests about continuing various programs or restoring. He asked for IMET, which is a military assistance program, not just to Iraqi forces, but others around the country, to be restored. That had been axed out, I think, in the last budget. He wants that money back. There were little things, but not in a strategic way, the way you mentioned, Brian.
Michael Duffy, Assistant Managing Editor of Time Magazine, thanks for coming on and breaking down some of that testimony for us.
You bet. Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC with our executive producer, Nuala McGovern, and producers Jody Avergon and Kate Hines today. That's Debbie Daughtry at the audio controls. You can keep listening to the hearings in full on our website, wnyc.org. We're streaming them there. Or stay tuned on the radio for the Leonard Lopate Show.